Now, In Depth with Francis Rose.
Thanks very much for listening on Thursday, March 5th, 2015. It's Federal News Radio. Our producers, Sean McCauley and Nicole Grisco. Our web editors, Michael O'Connell. Later this hour, a 9-point action plan to a more diverse Air Force. That and more this hour on In Depth with Francis Rose. First, though, a growing trend among federal employees is a sense they can't get away from their work. The National Academy of Public Administration says changes in mobile technology mean employees think they have to be available all the time. That's just one of the workforce issues that federal agencies are dealing with. Anne-Marie Bryant is CEO of Beacon Associates and looking at a variety of human capital challenges across government, among other issues. Anne-Marie, it's terrific to talk to you. Thank you for joining me on Industry Chatter today. First of all, tell me what Beacon Associates does for your clients in the federal government. Thanks for being on today.
Well, Francis, thank you so much. I'm happy to be on the show today and have an opportunity to talk to you and your audience. Beacon works with the government in a variety of ways, but what's more interesting is how we work with the government. We walk that fine line of helping support their organization and helping them to innovate and focus on high performance. So we have the ability, since we're a small women-owned, privately held company, to say, hey, you know, this year we're going to take a little bit less money because we're going to help the government to save money on this particular opportunity, whether it's in workforce improvement or project management or whatever area we're supporting them.
You've been with the company for a long time, since the very beginning, but you are now the chief executive officer. Congratulations on that new appointment. How do you move a company forward, not just your company, but as you talk to your colleagues and so on, in a market like we're in today, where a lot of agencies are asking for innovation and they're asking for the next big thing, but everybody knows that's in the context of budgets getting smaller and tighter?
Oh, that's a great question. And yes, we talk about it all the time. There are many different plateaus of growing a business. When you're two people, you have different challenges than when you're 10 or when you're 100 or when you're 1,000. And the government's facing the same problems in the different areas of their work, and how to help them to understand the work they're doing and how to improve and innovate within the guidelines of the specific project. So you really need to look at the constraints within your specific opportunity and help the government to find ways to better utilize the resources they have available and to make improvements within those constraints.
Now, one of the biggest areas where agencies are constrained right now, as I talked about at the beginning, is human capital. Some agencies have experienced hiring freezes in the last couple of years. Some agencies are even seeing the overall sizes of their workforces shrinking. The people that they do have, they're trying really hard to keep, but some of the tools that they have to retain their employees are seeing some constraints as well, training and so on. What are some of the biggest challenges that you're seeing? What are your clients in government or prospective clients in government coming to you and telling you about the challenges they're seeing when it comes to human capital, Anne-Marie?
Oh, there are a million of those, right? There's the, as you're saying, there's aging of the population, there's knowledge retention within the government, there's developing the new journeyman level workforce, and there's constant change and understanding how to deal with that. And it, working with the government through each of those, again, it's about empowering people, helping people to be in the area where they are most competent. Sometimes when you're working in the government, you continue to progress and develop through the roles. You end up getting ahead of yourself, and you're missing a key component that many of your staff has, and they want to move forward. But then you're not supporting them in developing it because you never caught up to that. That happens a lot with social media, right? I'm not a digital native. A lot of the people that work for me are. So they have to catch me up on that. And it's a matter of helping the agencies to understand how to empower their organization, even in areas where they're not comfortable, and understanding what that means to them from a risk perspective and an opportunity perspective.
The challenges that they're seeing, are you seeing themes as to how they're trying to address them or how they're successfully addressing them? Because I understand they can be two different things.
Absolutely. You see a lot more of the government focusing on putting innovative things in place. NASA has been doing a lot of partnering with commercial entities outside of government and using that to increase their scope of resources and what they have available to achieve their goals. HHS has an innovation center that they've been putting together that helps them to get the people that they have on board more comfortable with change and to inject new and innovative ideas into the thought process. And when you can make time to fit those things in, if you can help people to step away from their day-to-day goals in order to move forward with those things, that will help them to make innovative changes rather than incremental changes.
And that's the difference, I imagine, can be exponential, can it?
Oh, it makes a tremendous difference. It's so easy to get lost in the day-to-day. Everybody is busy. Everybody's having to work extra hours and put in more time. And if you focus so much on those specific items rather than the big picture, you are unable to take the larger steps that are necessary to make the change.
The training issue is one that, I mean, every budget cycle that get when budgets shrink, people say all the time that's the first place that that budgets get tighter, where it goes away. Are you seeing or helping your clients with innovative ways to provide the kind of personal and career growth that people take away from training without either the traditional setup, which is proving to be less effective than it used to be, Anne-Marie, and also without the associated costs of that, too?
Right. Well, Francis, I'm a big fan of moving away from traditional training. The traditional training takes a large group of people, and it teaches them how to be average. And we really need to take the people who are your top performers, your key folks in an organization, and understand what's making them exceptional. And if you can understand that and take those elements and push them down to the population, then instead of just getting everybody to the point of average, you are getting everybody to, you're creating a new average. You're getting everybody up closer to that exceptional level.
Does that wind up, though, being more work intensive when you're trying to put folks into different categories and determine how most effectively you're going to work with a smaller group of people? It seems to me, at least, maybe I'm wrong, you have smaller groups of people going a number of different directions, and that might be more intensive manpower-wise and resources-wise to keep track of.
I can see how you would think that. I will tell you that it's actually more cost-effective and easier to implement because your key performers are usually only a couple percentage points of your population. If you have 100 people, maybe you're only talking to 5 people to understand the key attributes, mm-hmm. and then taking those lessons and consistently pushing them out to the rest of the group. So it's not quite as chaotic as it would seem. It's more starting with your best practices that are customized for your organization and helping people to understand them.
The communications, we've talked a couple of these items already, Anne-Marie, that revolve very intensely around communications between industry and government. Are you seeing that improving, declining, staying about the same? What's the status of that in your view?
Communications between industry and government. I think there are some very few, but some very good examples of where that's improving. But I think more often we still struggle with that. Whenever you're in a bid situation, the communications drop off substantially. Everything by necessity has to become very formal. And that diminishes the probability for people to learn more so they can propose better opportunities for the government to implement. Some of the best communications that I have seen are happening outside of the normal proposal cycle, right? They're more working with external organizations or nonprofits like ACT-IAC on the technology side, or there are others as well, where you can participate and have industry and government communicating and solving problems, but it's not related to any specific opportunity. And I think those are your areas where you have opportunities to build the knowledge and the depth so you can have better innovations you can propose to the government.
Do those kinds of environments, though, really provide an effective place for an agency to learn about what the potential landscape is to solve whatever issue it is that they're about to deal with? I mean, if you and I have if I'm an agency official and you and I have a conversation in that kind of environment, but I might not be on the path to asking for that solution for another 6 months, what you and I talked about back then might not be applicable, and maybe I have a little bit of a head start on what I am trying to do, but not much of one, it seems to me at least.
Right. It's certainly not perfect, but it helps to build awareness and perspective. So that person on the federal side that's coming and talking to me or anybody else from industry that's involved in these organizations can gain more knowledge about how these different opportunities that could come into play. And they might gain 5, 10, 20 perspectives. And all of that can go into the research that they're doing to better understand how to move their organization forward. It may never be related to a procurement activity. It just helps to build their knowledge and perspective of what tools and opportunities are out there for them.
We have talked in the past, you and I, off the air, about change management. And that's where I want to pick up when we come back. Anne-Marie Bryant is the new CEO of Beacon Associates, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we'll continue our conversation in a moment on In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio. Welcome back to In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Anne-Marie Bryant, the Chief Executive Officer of Beacon Associates. We talked about change management a moment ago, Anne-Marie. That is one thing I keep hearing in the personnel realm especially, but also in other areas, that the government continues to struggle with. I don't know if it's a process or an outgrowth of the makeup of the workforce or the kind of the natural risk aversion of people who are in government because of the oversight environment or what. But what is your sense of where that is going, the change management trends that we're seeing, whether they're generational or cultural or other in the federal government?
Well, the only constant is change,
yes.
That's for sure. when you throw in the generational and cultural aspects and then you toss the political on top of that, it just becomes more complicated. I don't think you can say that the source of change is generational change or cultural change or political change. It is more that those are complicating factors. Change management needs to be a part of every single thing we're doing. And the bottom line is there's a lot of change in government today. And there's more willingness to embrace the change than there's ever been because of the decreasing budgets and the things that we need to accomplish with those.
That's an encouraging sign if there is more willingness to take on change. Is that pushing down, though, throughout organizations, do you have a sense? Or is that just still kind of brewing at the tops of the orgs right now?
I'm seeing it a little bit all through the organizations, actually. The fact that their budgets are cut are making the ability to stay the same the biggest risk. Because if they stay the same, then they're going to have to lose something that they've been accomplishing. Some key element that they wanted to put in place to achieve their mission will not happen. They're going to need to look at everything that they can fit into their budget and figure out how to do it differently. They're not liking it, but they're having to make things happen in order to move forward.
What's driving most of the discussion about innovation right now? I know that on the surface it's budget, but is it that underlying sentiment that may be part of it too, the idea that we know we can't, even if we wanted to, stay the same, Anne-Marie?
Well, I definitely think that that's a piece of it. I think it's also helping our leaders to be more active listeners. And I'm a big fan of the notion that there are leaders at all levels of the organization. When I say leaders, I'm not just talking about numero uno. It's every single person in the organization is a leader. But when they're presented with a problem that's unsolvable within their current budget constraints or whatever other constraints have been put on top of them, they're better listeners to the ideas and or concepts that are coming from the next level down. And those ideas and concepts might be from a different generation. They might be from a different culture, but they present different options for doing things that perhaps have not been considered because it was too difficult previously.
It strikes me that's a more encouraging and a more healthy environment to develop leaders, too, because I know taking risks is not necessarily a good quality of a good leader, but the willingness to consider all different kinds of potential courses of action and potential outcomes is certainly an aspect of a good leader. And that's something that especially younger people who come into government say they are maybe seeing a little bit more of them before, but not seeing as much as probably they would like.
Right. I would agree. I would agree. I think that we are having the opportunity to develop the better listening skills in our leaders. And again, not, like you said, not taking too great of a risk, but better considering all of the options. So your younger person coming into the government, if they have a stronger leader that's willing to listen to them, they can alleviate some of the fear or some of the risk that might be associated with an idea, because they may have more knowledge about that idea than somebody more senior in the organization has at this point.
What are you seeing as the state of the art right now, the types of things, not necessarily specific programs unless you want to, but what's kind of the state of the art in leadership development in government right now, Anne Marie?
Oh, there's a whole lot there, but I think that the state of the art goes back to taking the key knowledge of the key performers and then rolling that down and across the organization. So it is more creating a cluster of people that has the leadership skills. They need to be empowered. They need to be protected. They need to learn and learn quickly, and they need to help each other. So where you see opportunities where you're taking cohorts of leaders at a certain level in an organization, but perhaps dispersed all across that group, and developing them together through some kind of cohort training, building up specific leadership skills, that is showing some tremendous promise.
And you mentioned that the training there, and that I was thinking as you were, before you even got to that word, is that fits with the description of the innovative training methods that you're talking about across government earlier in our conversation, where you have small groups of people going through things together that are very highly specialized to their career paths. Is that right?
Right, because then they have the opportunity to support each other. You want people to take those calculated risks, and if they take them, then they're going to fail, and they need to be able to support each other so that the ultimate successes happen quickly enough to cover up any smaller incremental failures.
We talked about innovation a number of different times in this conversation, Anne Marie, and you wrote this morning before we went on the air that it seems to be the consensus among a number of folks. Innovation and the government's current acquisition chain don't sync up as well as they could. Where are the missing links there, and what do you think would need to happen to make those two things sync up better?
It's a fine line to walk, and there are a lot of working groups that are trying to solve that specific problem. The challenge is that acquisition is designed to say, this is what we need, and please give it to us. And then industry responds to that. If you are, even from the acquisition perspective, if you're saying we're looking for innovation, put change in here, then the evaluation committee ends up looking at three or four or five bids that are completely different from each other and having to make more of a subjective decision between them. So it's a challenge. I think that some of the increases in communications that I said are kind of like the nice to have, but we're not seeing them all across government just yet, but where they're communicating more with industry before the RFP comes out. It's still communication to large groups, but they've had working groups from the industry side, from the government side, any place where they can gather more structure to put in there so you're not being bound to something that constrains the innovation, but you're not getting such bids that the government's finding itself in a spot where they're unable to render a fair decision.
One of the issues that's into that affects the acquisition community in that way is the funding problem that we've seen over the last couple of years. Are you encouraged that now, after a little bit of roiling, we finally have a budget in place for the rest of the fiscal year for the entire government, and for the first time in I don't know how long, they're appropriated bills? And I actually saw a report on Bloomberg today that now that that's passed, the appropriations committees in both houses are already working on budget resolutions to try to get back on track. That must be a good sign for people in your line of work, Anne Marie.
It's very encouraging. It's been a very long time since we've been in this situation. The consistency of funding has been a challenge for everybody I know. It's certainly an industry challenge, but a government challenge as well. It helps when you can plan for it. You can say, well, this is what we're going to do. As soon as funds get released, we'll move it forward. So planning and communications are a key element. But for Appropriations Committee to be able to move forward and actually get some of those things in place earlier will help everybody to take things to the next level.